The views expressed on the Big Shiny podcast do not express the views of Big Shiny Robot as a whole, its subsidiaries, or its sponsors.
And the Big Shiny podcast contains coarse language like penis butt. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey man, I'm Kevin Smith.
Jason Mewes.
Welcome to Big Shiny Robot.
Brought to you by the fine folks at BohemianBrewery.com.
Bohemian Brewery.
That's not
their new theme song. It is. I wrote it. They paid me.
God damn
Collected
it.
A check, cashed it.
Oh, welcome to the latest episode of the Shut Up Tom podcast. So, sitting across from me, already making asinine remarks in this episode, is Tom, also known as Zombietron.
Welcome to the Thunderdome, bitches.
Also known as your basement.
Form one enter, one man leaves.
Really, I just go to bed. It's just what happens.
Tom runs Bartertown.
I am Tyson, also known as R-Spot on BigShinyRobot.com. And joining us this week, because Kylie is still, like, supposedly he's sick, but he's still fucking hungover from his Vegas birthday bender. Jimmy is fixing a door hinge, which he's probably still working on 3 hours later. And Lucas, I can only assume, is up to his eyeballs in pre-Comic-Con planning, which begs the question how Brian, also known as Swankmatron, was able to join us tonight, but we're glad you're here.
Lucas didn't give me a choice. He said, I'm not going. You need to go handle those assholes for me.
Somebody put up, make sure they don't say anything that offends the podcast people.
And also joining us this week is Mr. Mark Avo, also known as Zendobot.
Hi, guys.
Yo, dog.
You just sucked the life out of this podcast. Yeah, What's the matter with you?
We need someone to fill in for Kylie and say something like incredibly offensive.
I needed caffeine.
Penis butt.
Thank you, Tom.
Sorry, I'll walk to the coffee shop.
When you said penis butt, I thought penis butter.
What is that?
It's like dick cheese.
Ooh.
I thought it was just a pat of butter shaped like a dick.
And
like,
you know that exists.
Imagine like cutting that off and spreading that neatly across your bread.
You know that exists. There's some bachelorette party somewhere that has found some way to incorporate that.
Bread and butter in the shape of penises.
Yeah. I'm telling you guys, are missing out. You could probably get Dr. Jones to close the podcast.
Shit. All right.
Or Fleshlight. I don't know.
We could do the whole cast with like cock rings on, vibrating cock rings.
Funny you bring up Fleshlight. This is the collectibles and comics podcast.
The iPad thing?
Yeah, so we actually got, I don't know, did you see that we got approached for,
Did we take him up on it? Jimmy will review the fuck out of it. I don't
fucking know. But we got an email, like, from the makers of the Fleshlight to BigShinyRobot.com, because, I don't know, they must have read some of Kathleen's, like, porn reviews or something.
Which is why I'm thinking, it doesn't even matter what it is, we should send it to Kathleen.
Yeah. But they offered, honestly, they're like, we will send you a free Fleshlight to review.
Where was I?
Well, Lucas sent it to Jimmy and said, I will hit them up for this if you will do a review on it. I don't think that happened. Huh?
On the show.
On the show, yeah.
Man, you know, if you get him one of those, he'll bring it every time.
Yeah, he'll bring it and he'll be like, so I used this a lot. You guys want to pass it around so everyone can see it?
Like, but then he'll be like, hey, I'm Tom, can I borrow your iPad?
I think I would just get a dildo and some lube and just have some terrible sound effects for you guys every podcast.
So about that dancing baby Groot.
I wasn't done talking about the Fleshlight.
Segway. That is an amazing segue.
So let's talk about collectibles first. We'll kind of switch the order around this time. The ongoing saga that is my Lego addiction. I brought with me my Star Wars Star Destroyer, which is... I think it's awesome. Brian, you're the Star Wars guy.
It's a handsome toy.
Thank you.
There was obviously a lot of tender love and care putting this together.
There was a ton. Yes.
And well, Brian gave it like the 5-point inspection. Like he moved the guns around during the last episode. He pulled the top like control bay off and was like looking at it.
I was playing with it. I was like, I've got this thing about starships from Star Wars, and I like having them and playing with them. I've never had a Star Destroyer toy.
Yeah.
I've recently acquired a Imperial shuttle from 1984.
Oh, nice.
I'm absolutely in love with.
Nice. So my next purchase is, because I'm kind of doing the Star Wars thing right now, I was actually kind of mad. My last trip to the Lego store earlier this week, I ended up buying another Lego movie set, which I was happy with. It was one I'd been wanting. But I wanted the Mos Eisley Cantina set that they've got out there, and I should have bought it when I saw it because it hasn't been there like my last two or three trips to the Lego store.
I've learned about Lego Star Wars is buy it when you see it.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you looked up the prices of the Millennium Falcon they released a while ago?
Like the big one that's like the size of a coffee table, right?
No, just the regular
one. I have the regular one.
In the box, they're going for like $5,000 or $6,000.
Like the one where like all the flaps on the top open up? Yeah, I just got that at the Lego store for...
No, that's the new one.
Oh, okay.
The one they put out 6 or 7 years ago.
No, I think Lucas has that one.
Yeah.
Obviously like not.
$5,000 or $6,000 on eBay.
Jesus. But this is a Star Destroyer. It opens up, like you take the control bay off and then the flaps fold open. It comes with two stormtroopers, some Imperial officers, and a Darth Vader figure. And it even actually comes with a little hologram of the Emperor on the table and everything. But yeah, this folds open like that.
I think it would be cool if it came with the giant, like the giant head of the Emperor, like a Lego head of the a holographic head of the Emperor.
Yeah.
Which is where you'd see him in a Star Destroyer.
The fact that it folds open is super cool, though. So you've got the whole, like, deck there. You've got your little stormtroopers. Yeah,
you've even got the... I don't know if you've seen this, Brian, because it was kind of laying there.
So there's no bounty hunters here. Clearly you didn't need that.
No bounty hunters. But it's got the little droid thing. The little mouse droid, yeah.
Oh, my God. That is around. Sick, man.
So... It took me a second because, like, they have you build that thing just in, like, one shot. Like, put all these pieces together and set it to the side. And it took me a second. I was like, what the fuck is this? Oh, well, that's cool.
It just makes
me
think of that scene where it's driving up the hallway and it runs into Chewbacca and it's like, fuck,
turns around, So it's great. One of kind of, like, the little nuanced things that I really appreciate about it. So this whole little mechanism here in the center when I was building this, I was like, what the fuck is that for? I thought it was maybe, like, kind of like a key thing to like open this up to fold it up, but it's actually so you can just pick the damn thing up by your finger, which I mean no one on the podcast can see it, but you can pick it up from like just this little hook that raises out of the center of it so you can fly it around, and it's nice. I'm really enjoying
it. What sounds do you make when you're flying it around?
Well, there's no sound in space, so I don't make any.
There isn't Star Wars, though. I'm saying, what sounds do you make when you're flying it around?
I don't necessarily make any sounds, but when I'm, like, carrying it, so, like, when I was coming from the car up to Tom's house, like, you know, I've got my hand hooked around it, and, like, even as I'm, like, walking up to the door, I'm kind of, like maneuvering it.
I got to make this walk up to the door fucking cool.
Yeah, I'm not, like, just, like, walking up with it, swinging it around. I'm, like, guiding it around.
You're
like,
guiding it in, going, like, I wonder what they're going to think of this in Bartertown.
But the next one I want to get, because I was always a big fan of this ship from Star Wars, and I don't know why it doesn't get a lot of attention, but the B-Wing.
Oh, everybody loves the B-Wing.
But like growing up, like I had the B-Wing toy, and like all my friends, like they wanted the X-Wings.
I thought the A-Wing's the one that didn't get any love.
I loved the B-Wing too. I had a little snap-type model kit of a B-Wing when I was growing up.
Yeah.
Playing the B-Wings in the X-Wing game.
Yeah.
The tabletop, the Fantasy Flight one is... They're fun. I don't know that. Have you guys played that Fantasy Flight?
That game is fucking hard as shit.
It's fun. Like
it is. I have it. It's just hard. And
I think the hardest thing about it is like working up the will to like set up a table to play.
And like, well, so my buddy spent like he bought everything. Like he went on eBay and bought someone's complete collection, and we sat down and played one night. And the only thing was like it was just man, it's fun, but it's
simplify it because you just take like 100 points worth of ships each.
And play. See, he was using, like, custom builds through an app and doing all this crazy shit, and he was making me play with, like, I was playing with two Millennium Falcons.
Yeah,
so I had a Han and a Chewie, and I was like, dude, I've got the starter set in my office. Can I just play with my fucking X-Wing and go for it? Like...
That would be the way I would advise to play, but it's super fun. I play that with my kid, and it's funny because he's completely unpredictable. It's like... playing against a psychotic person. The really interesting thing about the game dynamic is you have to predict where you think your opponent is going to move, and then you have to... there's no actual hard measurements. You just have to ballpark everything, and you have to ballpark the angle that
And you're using, like, the fucking angle tools, and then, like, you have to, like, visualize it before you measure, like, okay, I'm going to do a 90-degree right turn and go three paces and pray to God I don't fly off the table. Go.
Yeah, and not hit another ship.
Yeah.
And have to predict what they're doing and what they're going to do before they do it. They really did simulate... they really did simulate dogfighting.
Yeah.
So, because the worst pilots are the ones that go first. So, if you're a terrible pilot, you go first, and the best pilots go last. But the best pilots also get to shoot first. Mm-hmm. So that means the worst pilots, chances are they're not even going to get a chance to shoot.
Oh man.
But yeah, it's fun.
So yeah, so
the B wings are fun.
Yeah. And so big fan of the B wings. And then Brian and I were talking before we started recording tonight. They're already putting out the Star Wars Rebels Lego sets. And what's the name of their main ship?
The Ghost.
The Ghost. The Ghost set's the one I've been eyeing. But I want to see the ship. Like, not. It's not like. So I had said on the last podcast that they came out with some of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles based off the movie Lego sets. And some of them look kind of cool. And if you separate that from the movie, which I haven't seen, so it'd be really easy to do. I mean, they look like they're kind of fun sets to have. But I don't know. It's not a franchise I want to invest in. But the Star Wars Rebel stuff, I'm just kind of like, well, I want to see the show first because that might determine the order in which I want to buy some of these.
The coolest thing about the Ghost on the show is that they've got a randomizer on their registry ID. So every time they jump into a new system, it's randomized what ship they're transponding that they are. So the Imperials have a hard time catching them and figuring out who they are.
Hence why it's called the Ghost.
Yeah.
Is that the one that also breaks apart?
Yeah, it has that.
It's like three different sections, and they break apart.
Everybody looks at the show very, very Firefly-like, which I think is funny because I think Firefly is pretty directly inspired by, like, what if we had a show with Han Solo and a crew?
Jane would be Chewbacca.
This is very much... It's much more Firefly than we've seen anything in Star Wars.
Cool. So, yeah, so I've been looking to do that. But my next one, because I got the snow speeder, I think that's the A-Wing, right? Or no?
No, the A-Wing is not the snow
speeder. The A-Wing is the A-Wing.
Yeah. All right, sorry. I'm not this big star. But anyway, I got the snow speeder, which comes with a Luke pilot and then...
Dak.
Dak.
We had Dak on Dak. Full of Sith.
Yeah, I remember. I actually listened to that episode.
He was cool.
Yeah, he seemed like a fun guy to talk to. But I got the snow speeder, so I need to get the walker, the AT-AT?
Yeah.
Yeah, so
the
I need...
All-terrain armor transport.
Yeah, so I need to get that because it's another big set, and it stands, like, this tall. That's the next big one I'm going to buy because then, you know, the snow speeder's got the grappler. Go ahead and get your beer, Tom. Just grab
get
it.
A beer. Just jump just right in.
Get it.
The
Tyson's boring you. You need beer. Yeah. We understand.
But it's got the grapple on the back that, you know... loop it around the legs and everything. So I got to get that up so I can set up a whole scene. And so anyway, that's the latest on that.
Here are my thoughts. Okay. First one, how would you make this Star Destroyer cooler?
How would I make it cooler?
Yeah.
Put bounty hunters on it.
See this.
Yeah. It'd be cool if it came with some bounty hunters. You put a beer cap on it.
Yeah. Put the Falcon on the side.
Put the Falcon on the side. That'd be awesome. Baby. Yeah. Yeah.
Little mini Falcon. I could build a little something. That
the other thing is, how long till we see a you were ghosted T-shirt with the Ghost blasting a TIE fighter?
Probably soon. I can't imagine. I think like come October, you're going to see.
It's already on T-Fury.
Really?
No,
that would be sweet though.
Coming in October, you're going to see a whole host. I mean, even now, actually, they've got all the toys from the show. In Targets already.
Yeah, it's all out there already. Yeah, I've been seeing.
I need to walk the toy section.
They
I haven't
sell
done it in a while.
The masks. The there's this. They're introducing a lot of old Macquarie art sort of stormtrooper masks and helmets and things in different places of the show that are new sorts of stormtroopers we haven't seen before. And Ezra, who's the kid with the slingshot, he steals stormtrooper helmets and gets on their comm systems and fucks with them.
Oh,
and,
that's so
they're
great.
Selling the masks.
Oh, nice.
Of the you know, like how they've got the Wolverine mask and the
yeah.
Oh, you know, those great. Masks. They've got those. They've got them for Vader now and Ezra's trooper mask.
My wife and I, Brandy Gurlio, we go to the toy section and late at night when no one else is around just to get some exercise in the winter, and we'll take the masks and take goofy pictures just because
we've done that.
It is the most fun. And it's
Target at like 8 p.m. is the best.
Yeah.
It's awesome. But also, I want to talk about this because I'm sure Lucas probably would have if he was here. But the Guardians of the Galaxy Groot and Rocket Raccoon set that's coming out. So it's a from Hot Toys. If you're not
sexy,
yeah. If you listen to this podcast at all, you're familiar with what they are. Very high end collectible. They're coming out with a set that comes with Groot and Rocket Raccoon. And if you pre-order it, you get the model of the little baby dancing Groot, which people are just fucking falling all over themselves. Like, I can't tell you. Within a week of that movie coming out, how many online things I saw of like how to make your own baby Groot. And they were using the things that you were talking about. It was the dancing flowers that already exist that, like you said, that you put on music and they dance to the beat of the music. People were crafting those into some actually really, really solid looking dancing baby Groots. It was pretty damn impressive. But Tom, who's coming out with a baby Groot?
Hop. Funko is dropping a Baby Groot dancing pop, yep. And it's awesome. It's a little they put it on their Twitter this morning, but it's got the little flower pot with like the Groot, and he's got a big smile on his face. He's kind of got his elbows out like it's grooving,
mm-hmm.
And you can damn well believe I will be the first person in line to buy that stupid shit.
Yeah,
I believe they did. So they've actually there was something that was coming out officially licensed, and I'm not sure. Yeah, it's the Funko Pop one.
Yeah.
I can't believe they haven't like actually gone into production on
like
an actual dance.
Well, and I think Mark brought it up earlier. You know, the talking fucking fish, like the fish on the wall. I can't believe like every toy store in America doesn't have a potted Groot that you turn on and it plays music and dances. Like,
yeah. Because they would make a fortune on that.
They would make a fuckload. They would make more money than the movie in like a weekend.
Sure,
why not?
Science.
Yes, geology.
Now you know, say a word.
I was just going to say it's because they didn't give Lucas the merchandising rights. That's
verbose.
That's why it's not there.
Obtruse.
So, it would have already existed. The Rebel toys are already out, right?
Yeah. Right.
It would have been a baby dancing group before the movie.
So. No, I think there's definitely some things from Lucasfilm that Marvel can learn as far as their merchandising efforts.
Absolutely.
But I think the dancing group pop will be freaking awesome. And that's actually, I'm really just, this is the first month I've seen somebody post their Loot Crate and wish I was a member of Loot Crate.
Really? What was in it?
They got, was
it? Stuff.
They got Rocket Raccoons.
What?
Was it Rockets or was it Groots? Either Rockets or Groot pop figures and then something else.
Really?
Yep.
So that's actually something that Nikki, one of our Twitter
at
and
Pumazili.
Yeah, or Pumanana69. one of our followers on Instagram and Twitter and faithful listeners, so shout out to her again, but wanted us to bring up, so I'm actually glad you said something, Tom. So
you're welcome.
The so her question is, what do you think of the Loot Crate / Nerd Block craze that she's only just hearing about? Do any of us subscribe to any of these? Do we have a preference? Are there any others out there besides like Loot Crate that we would
recommend?
I know
Nick did it. Nick got on Loot Crate really early because he did a couple unboxing videos.
Yeah.
But like the early on stuff was shitty. It was really bad.
Cassidy loves his.
See, and Cassidy was the one that posted the Rocket, mm-hmm. And that made me like really upset. I think they're getting better. I don't subscribe.
Maybe if there's more people signing up.
Yeah, the more people that sign up, the bigger their budget will go, and the more they can lower the, you know.
The problem is I already spend so much money a month on everything else.
I actually run one right now. If you send me $15 a month plus shipping costs,
Jesus Christ,
I'll send you a book every month.
Oh, shit.
For about 7 months, they'll be my books, and after that, just whatever I find laying around.
There are very many used bookstores. A lot of used bookstores.
Everybody's getting like already filled out Mad Lib books.
Yeah.
So I don't think anyone here personally signs up to any of them. I can tell you Nick wasn't super impressed with Loot Crate, but that was at the beginning.
And what is he impressed by ever?
That's yeah, a good
also
point.
A fair assessment. I can tell you that my sister-in-law does BarkBox, which is like the dog pet owner version of it.
Dude, I'm glad my wife doesn't listen to this podcast.
I'm gonna text her and tell her about it.
So it was Cassidy's girlfriend that posted it, and I found it. So she got a really awesome lightning.
Miss Vegan Kylie.
Miss Vegan Kylie. She got lightning patch you can put on your shoes. It was a Groot pop figure, a Leonardo Ooze action figure, a Sonic car freshener, a Leonardo iBand. There was a kid robot thing back there, and then like some weird collecting cards. So that's actually a pretty good haul.
Now, doesn't Loot Crate, though, have different levels that you can subscribe to?
I think so.
So I wonder if they're just...
Is it because it's like Christmas? I don't really understand it. I like getting what I want.
Right.
I'm an adult. I'm not really into the whole presents thing. See, it's like, I like that. I'm going to buy
it. It's the blind box thing, though, because like kid robot stuff, like I love the kid robot collectibles. And
so
part of the fun of it is for me to go out and buy them and be like, oh, did I get the one? It's a fucking double. And then I give it to a friend or something like that.
Okay. Then I get that. That makes more sense to me.
Yeah. So I don't know. I see the appeal to it. And Loot Crate actually did, I think it was last month, they did the villain box.
Yeah.
And where they actually, like when you got your Loot Crate box and you opened it up, it had been like graffitied and messed with by like different villains, like marked up by different villains, and then everything that was inside of there. And I think it was DC specific.
Yeah, because there was like Joker stuff.
Yeah, it was like Joker stuff, but everything in their Loot Crate for that month was related to DC villains, and they changed like the whole look of their packaging to kind of go with that theme. So
I think it's cool now. I remember like when Nick started doing it, I was like, maybe I'll jump on this because they got some really cool. But like the first couple months he did it, all the stuff he got was like shit you get at GameStop for reserving a game.
Yeah.
That my GameStop manager friends would just give me if I really wanted. So I was like
gummies. Like you got
like
some gummies
and like a fucking like there. Mario key fob and stupid shit. But I think like you said, now that they've grown, I mean, that Turtles figure was cool. The Groot was pretty cool. So I think now they're kind of at a point where it might be worth jumping on board looking at.
All right.
Penis butt.
So that's it for collectibles, I think, unless you guys have anything else. The silence is no.
We Let's bought, talk about comics. My wife bought a really cool Pop figure. I don't remember what it was. So fuck it.
That's Pop, so it probably was really cool.
Yeah, dude, we have so many fucking Pop figures. I'll have to show you, Mike. Did she show you the cabinet?
She didn't have to.
Yeah. It's
pretty obvious.
It's retarded. It's
pretty cool.
So, comics. What are you guys reading?
Should I go first? Because I probably have the least... I have the least angle to say.
Run it.
So, I just finished reading Elephant Men Mammoth Volume 1. Really super cool. So it's basically they took all these Elephant Men stories, which has been a long-running series that I had never heard of, and edited it together to kind of tell you like a broad story of the Elephant Men world. And it's a fucking cool thing because they go over a very wide variety of stories. So the first one is really talking about how this warlord named Mappo paid a geneticist to create these awesome, like just merciless war machines, right? So you've got, you know, these giant rhinoceroses, giraffes, basically just savanna animals that are just walking, talking, killing machines, and there's just waves of them. And Europe gets wiped out with, like, this crazy disease. And then this warlord is like, hey, great, now let's fucking kill humanity. And they drop this army in Europe, and they're just mowing people down. And they talk about a lot of specific stories. So my favorite one out of the whole 500 pages was one called Yvette. And it's this French woman who's fighting in this resistance against the animals, and her boyfriend, friend, trainer, whatever this guy is, gets killed, and she kills a zebra thing, and she's like, oh my god, these die. They have fear. They talk. They're humans, but they're animals. And so she goes on this fear campaign, and she becomes a war cry. So, like, if she kills one, she carves her name into their head. And or she'll hang them and burn them alive and write her name in their blood above them. And so you get to follow this, like, incredible, like, rampage where people are trying to find her because she's, like, this inspirational war cry that's uniting the human race. And then it takes you further, you know, you get to a point where she's healing. She goes back out to war. And then the ending is amazing of this book because they take you to, like, the after times where the war is ended. China has bred these crazy tiger animals that are just, like, fucking tiger ninjas that are tearing shit up. It's really neat. Like,
of course they'd be ninjas.
Of course, yeah. They're Chinese tigers, right? And so they do that, and then the war ends and separates out at some point. And so all of the animals, instead of being killed, they've been integrated into society and rehabilitated. So you've got, like, you know, elephant men and rhinoceros men walking through the city streets and alligator men and all this stuff. And some of them work for, like an undercover police force that is, like, either hunting down criminals or doing whatever, trying to find. And then some of them are, like, just actors. It's super, super
cool. So what
cool.
you're saying is we need to start killing all these endangered species before they rise up.
Right, because once they rise up, it's like Terminator 3 but with fucking rhinoceroses, and they're way more scarier than a T-1000. Way scarier.
Does it get crazy where she, like, eats them because you might as well?
Yes, she does eat them at one point.
And then, like, she's like, hey, tiger penis, and...
That doesn't happen.
Oh, okay.
No tiger penis.
She does drink tiger sperm, though.
Yes, that might happen.
For virility.
For virility.
Yeah.
But it's really a cool read, and, like, the whole tone is really uplifting.
It's like...
I can step right through tiger penis, man. You got nothing on me on that one. Wow. But it's a really cool book. I really, really dug it.
It does sound actually really cool. Been interested in it for a while.
And I also just finished a run. They did the Apocalypse War, or the Class Apocalypse War, and it's a remake. It's a same type of idea. They've edited together a bunch of old Judge Dredd stories. And so the whole premise is they have all the blocks in Judge Dredd, right? And they kind of do like a 5 points war style where all these blocks start trying to kill each other, and the judges have to step in and stop it, and it's like total fucking chaos warfare. And it's really, really cool.
Nice.
That's all I've got. I mean, they're throwing tanks at him and all their, like, paralyzing foam and all the crazy Judge Dredd stuff you'd expect. But it's – I think I liked it a lot because I can't remember the movie – oh, Gangs of New York. Like, it's very much like Gangs of New York but Judge Dredd style, which is super fun.
I love Gangs of New York.
Oh, such a great film.
As for me, I think the biggest thing I've been reading actually lately is following the Star Wars book, of course. Darth Maul, Son of Dathomir, which is a comic series that when they canceled Clone Wars, this was a story that was written for season 7, went to script, went to pre-production, went to design, and the show got canceled. And you haven't seen it, but where they leave Darth Maul is bad news. And this finishes up that storyline.
Okay.
And it's the first thing that was published by anyone involved with Star Wars that's part of the new canon, because they threw everything out except for these new special things, and this is the first story officially blessed by that. And it's 4 issues long. Dark Horse put it out, and I can't stress to you enough that you need to get it now, because Dark Horse loses the license in just a few months, and they won't be reprinting it because they won't have the right to. And there's no guarantee that Marvel will be.
I have a follow-up to that that is specific to printing. Are they allowed to continue digitally
not selling
it?
So
if you don't buy it digitally, you ain't going to be able to read it.
Yeah.
Period. So both in print and digital, your options are buy it now.
Yeah.
Or you don't get it.
Yeah. And that goes the same for any Star Wars books you might have been interested in reading. Get them. Get them now. Unless it's the old Marvel books, because those Marvel books, the old Marvel books, that's the big first edition that they've announced. They're doing an omnibus of the first volume, recolored like they've done all their big omnibus books. Of that Marvel run, which has some really cool stuff in it, but it's clearly not... it is under the Legends banner. But I would say specifically that one story about Darth Maul, especially if you get into the Clone Wars, you're going to want to read it, because where they leave Darth Maul, it's not fair.
Okay. Mark?
Yeah, the Star Wars one is the big news I expected Brian to talk about. So I'll talk about two cool things that are big news, and then something I thought was pretty awesome. First off, of course, Multiversity, Grant Morrison's cross multiverse, you know, trip down acid lane.
My Twitter feed kind of lit up on Wednesday about how good it was.
Really, really good.
So if I was to say drop, like, I don't fucking... Is it an ongoing series, or is it like just a trade?
It's going to be ongoing for a while, but it's one of those, what they, you know, they call them... It's like a mini series, but okay. It's going to be a mini macro. And the problem with Morrison is, I mean, he'll set out to do a specific thing and then sometimes get caught up in it. So it could go bigger, but Morrison's right now I'm pretty sure it's eight. It's going to be eight.
That's issues. Fine. As long as I can drop Ultimate FF and start reading a real comic, like maybe that.
Why he's still sticking with...
I don't know, because I have to have 5 books in my hold.
Well, the Ultimate books just got really disappointing in the last couple months, except for Spider-Man.
Say, Ultimate Spider-Man's incredible.
What are the 5 books you've got?
Yeah, really.
Walking Dead.
Okay.
TMNT.
Okay.
Captain America. Ultimate FF. Oh, I have more than 5.
so why are
Ultimate
you...
Ultimate Spider-Man. And Swamp Thing. So 6. I have 6 books. So I could drop Ultimate FF.
You should be getting Snyder's Batman.
Okay.
I wasn't that happy about this last issue.
The problem I have, problem I have with catching with Batman is like I'm missing like 55 years of continuity.
No, that's why the whole new 52 thing.
I bought Killing Joke. I bought all, not Killing Joke. Death in the Family. I bought the Death in the Family portion. I really liked that.
But. And then I would suggest jumping on with Jason Aaron's Thor when it switches over with the girl.
I'm excited for that. I'm actually really excited to read about Girl Thor, and I kind of want to read the new
Girl Thor. That's the official in continuity name. Yep.
You're welcome, Internet. I named it. I just saved Marvel like $4 billion. Girl Thor.
They should call it Beta Ray Girl.
Beta Ray Betty.
Oh, no.
Yeah, no, there it is. Beta Ray Betty. That's what I'm calling her.
The other one, I do kind of want to. I need to go manipulate my hold and change some shit up, but I do want to get. The new Batgirl, I'm kind of intrigued by.
Her costume's awesome.
It's a great costume.
I fucking love
that costume. But I'm really worried that I'm going to get it. Because, like, have you read... Is anyone else reading the Ultimate stuff besides me?
I am.
Because, like, FF is really... Like, FF at least is tongue-in-cheek and zany. But the new Ultimates...
It's terrible.
...is, like, fucking Sex in the City. It's awful.
And there's
no boobs.
I don't think it's meant for... The demo that they're selling it to, which is really
reading audience.
Yeah, which is really sad because, I mean, I get what Marvel's done with some of their books, pushing the younger age stuff. I understand it. I know it gets readers, but you can't have a book in the Ultimates vein telling that type of stories for so long and then completely change gears on everyone.
And that's the problem.
The sales have got to be dropping like flies.
And it came off of Ultimates, which was this dark, kind of gritty. You know, nightmare, and then it's like fucking Jersey Shore.
Totally interrupted you. Sorry,
continue about Multiversity.
Okay, so Multiversity is the way he's going to do it is across these universes, he's going to make it very meta, where the people from the alternate universes read comic books starring the people that they're in. And so the big event is that there's a big bad thing that's going to eat up the entire multiverse, and there's a multiversal cop, the last of his kind of like a doctor. And he, by the end of the book, spoilers, is twisted because he says, oh, rescue me down the line. And he comes back and says, you didn't rescue me, you pricks. and now he's going to destroy the universe.
Exact quote from the panel.
So it sounds like it's like Grant Morrison read... Mark Miller's, was it 1984 or 1986?
I think, yeah.
And he was like, I could improve this. I could do this.
It's so heady and trippy, though, that it's definitely up Morrison's alley.
I have problems with Grant Morrison.
And so do I, but it started out... This first book is very strong. And the one problem with comics that any longtime comics reader will know is a first book is usually the easier one to nail. Book 2, 3, 4, if it's strong by book 4, it's going to be a good series. But this first one, it's knocked it out of the park. And the art by Ivan Reyes is spectacular. It's, you know, some of the best DC art right now.
So they're only on issue 1.
Yeah, that's the big one. The other big one in the indie world is the Fade Out, Brubaker. So Brubaker and Sean Phillips, they got their 5-year creative deal through Image, which is, hey, you guys can do whatever you want, we'll publish it. That is, well, I mean, as a creator, that's spectacular.
Well, and after it was on Fatale, I'm not shocked. Fatale was just incredible.
The trippy sex scene in the penultimate issue was some of the coolest art and storytelling
I need to go buy the penultimate issue, apparently.
Yeah, it is pretty cool.
Why isn't that in your hold?
Yeah.
Because I jumped in too late. Like, I didn't start getting a hold until Fatale was, like, issue 12?
Yeah, Fade Out. So good.
So I was just reading the
but the Fade Out, Mr. Jeremiah Lupo has always gets me to spend more money than I want to. Do you want the magazine one? Oh, not really. It's probably gonna get wrecked. We got bags and boards just for the bigger issues. I'm like, oh, cool, great. Oh yeah, it was $6.
Dude, upsold, motherfucker.
You know, exactly. He does it to me all the time.
That's just for the back and the board.
Yeah.
It's a special board.
I can't wait for the oversized, though, because the book was terrific, and it's not... If you are a Capes and Tights person, you're going to hate it. It is a setup as in the world of serialized television. It's in for the long game. This is set out to tell a specific story, and it's building to it. It's not everything you want in a first issue if you're used to traditional Capes and Tights comic book storytelling, because it's not going to, it does have the typical cliffhanger, but it's not anything that if you picked up the first issue just to try it out and you dropped it, you wouldn't leave it going, ah, there's no catharsis here. It's great. The art's great. I think it's something.
So what's the general idea of it thus far?
Yeah. So the general idea is that it starts off with someone who's been on an all night bender in Vegas.
Kylie
Walks is involved.
No, but it really does. The main character has been at this party, this Hollywood party, and he is just drunk as hell. He gets up out of a bathtub, and he's like, whoa, shit, where am I? And he realizes he's at this starlet's house. He's a writer for this movie, and he's at her house, and he was at a party last night, and has this sort of, oh, I'm coming out of this blackout, and of course she's dead.
I'm still waiting for this to divert from Kylie's story.
Right.
He's like, oh shit, she's dead. What do I do?
Dark City meets Sunset Boulevard.
Yeah. And so he, of course, wipes down the area, gets the hell out, and doesn't tell anyone, goes home, sleeps it off. The studio calls him, comes out to get him. He acts shocked about it. And then, of course, the studio security, who makes sure all these things these stars do don't go bad, meets up with him and says, do you remember what happened last night? And he goes through a series of it, and then he sees the paper where they faked her hanging herself. So then, of course, where's the mystery it lies in that is clearly he didn't kill her, but who did? And do they know he was there? And there's a really great kind of pervy in a Japanese way moment at the very end that's a cool little cliffhanger.
Yeah, the dude's raped by a tentacle. At the end, tentacle porn.
Well, it's close.
Which, there's an app I got to tell you guys about. Speaking of tentacle porn,
no thanks.
I also have a tentacle done with porn that. Anecdote.
I'm good.
My phone vibrate though? That's the
trying
one I'm
to cut
about.
Down on tentacle porn in my life. It's something I've had too much of.
And the last comic I want to talk such about thing. Is a cool one from Arkeo, and I just really liked it. It's called Rubicon, and it is a retelling of Seven Samurai, only through the eyes of an Afghanistan Special Forces team.
So not to steal your thunder, but I actually, so with Rubicon, they were doing a live action series through Machinima, and we actually did an interview with the writer of that, with the writer of Rubicon.
Dan Capel, Mark Long, or Christopher
Mark McCourt. Long. So Mark Long, we did an interview with him about 3 months ago talking about the live action through Machinima, which they did the first portion.
Are they going to finish it, my question.
I don't know if they ever got the funding to finish it. I haven't seen any press stuff on it since then. But I was bummed because Mark Long was like, yeah, dude, we'll send you a copy. He never sent me a copy.
Yeah. The book's strong. It rushes because it's very condensed, and so some of the Amazon reviews are like, there wasn't enough character development for me to care about this particular character. And it's like it's kind of an homage. It expects you to know those characters based on a 4-hour carousel.
Well, yeah, if you
movie.
really
hate people who use like character development. Character development has become code for lazy criticism.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
It's like
I feel like Brian in this podcast doesn't have enough character development.
See, lazy criticism.
Yeah.
No, seriously, people say, like, I don't think there was enough character development. And that doesn't mean that there wasn't actually character development. It's very rare you go in and watch a movie or read a comic or do anything where the character doesn't start at A and change and end at B. And that's what character development is. Sometimes that can be a moment. Sometimes that can be over a couple of hours of a character's life. They're confusing that with, I didn't connect with this character.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree with you. Huh.
Or you should have, where's the exposition for this character?
Yeah.
Where's the backstory for this character? I get their motivation, but like,
so people are confusing character development. Yeah.
It's more, tell me why I should care about this character. Yeah. Like,
overall, the reviews on Amazon are very glowing for it, though. Yeah. I really loved the book, but I'm a big fan of Seven Samurai.
So am I. I mean, that's actually, that's a Kurosawa film that my dad watches every month.
There's an episode of Clone Wars called Bounty Hunters that is a remake of Seven Samurai.
Hmm. Excellent.
And my dad and I used to watch Seven Samurai together all the time. So when they were pitching me the interview, I was like, I'm not really into this live action. They go, well, it's kind of a Seven Samurai thing. I was like, I'll take it. Done. So that's cool. So it's out now and going and awesome.
It is, yeah. It's about 150 pages. It's just a small
one. I want to check it out because I
might pick it up.
You're a Seven Samurai nerd, but you're not reading Usagi Yojimbo?
Come on, man. I got like so much shit on my plate. Don't be like that.
Yeah, he's got 6 comics in his hold, dude.
Yeah, and have you seen my video game list right now? Just wait till the next episode. You're gonna be like, God damn it, Tom.
I wanna mention one more too before we move on to you, Tyson. Afterlife with Archie.
I like how he thinks we're moving on to me.
Are we gonna talk about the Sabrina issue?
Well, the Sabrina, I haven't read that yet, but I read the first trade with the first
horrifying.
In a good way?
Yes. But wow.
Afterlife with Archie is this book where they're like, okay, let's take the Archie thing, like, and you expect Archie to just be this really sanitized, four-color, like, high school kids doing their thing. But they're like, let's get Francisco Francavilla to draw it.
Who's a pimp. He is a total pimp.
And let's basically put a zombie apocalypse in Riverdale and see how the Archie crowd, the Archie crew deals with that. And it's played very straight. It's played like a very straight Walking Dead-style drama. And there's an issue where Archie has to beat Jughead to death.
What?
A zombie Jughead. And it's like, you'd think like, wow, that's really entertaining because it would be a comedy, but like, Archie's torn up about this. And
it's not even the darkest part in that series, like, too.
Is it as bad as like Glenn's death in Walking Dead? Like, is it up there?
It's that dark. Yeah, wow. Yeah. It is that dark.
Like, so you take the tropes that they've been building for 75 years with Archie and then put them in The Walking Dead, essentially, with this gorgeous Francisco Francavilla, like, colored painting sort of art. It's much more realistic than the cartoony stuff that Archie usually is. And
It still feels like Archie, though.
Yeah, no, it does. They end up holed up in Veronica's dad's house because he's, like, the rich guy, and they're holed up there, and they're having these arguments about what they're going to do. And tensions are running high. And, you know, they're actually dealing with loss. They're dealing with all of these sorts of things the Riverdale crew would have to deal with if there was a zombie apocalypse without Jughead trying to go get, you know, scam a burger.
What's really, I find interesting about
which is why they had to kill him.
Yeah. Right. Get away from my burger, Jughead!
He's patient. He's one of the index patients, I guess is what you say, because patient zero is the dog, right?
I don't,
I might have spoiled something. Well, I'll shut up. But what I find interesting about it is that it is so much more real storytelling in the sense that it brings out human emotions and human conflict, not in that it's real storytelling and that the life with Archie where he dies is not real storytelling. But there's only so much you can draw out of Archie's dying. But when you've got people dying all around you, you're dealing with sacrificing people. Who do you leave behind? Who caused this mess? There's so much more human drama in Afterlife with Archie.
And apply that to the Riverdale crew. It's just so absurd. It's an idea that I think never should have worked, but does so well. I have no idea why no one did it sooner.
I'm surprised there aren't longtime Archie fans that are going, "You took a giant dump on Archie," and maybe it's because it's just so well done.
Well, I think that's part of it. I mean, my kids love it. My daughter absolutely adores Archie books, and she loves all the Archie books. And it doesn't matter if I hand her, you know, the sort of Archie digest you'd get at the supermarket. Do they still do those in the supermarket?
I think they do. The 100 pagers, yeah.
It doesn't matter if it's the one of my favorite comics, Baltazar and Franco did was Little Archie Meets Tiny Titans. And it was just a book of a crossover of the Riverdale gang and all the sidekicks from the DC Comics.
In Baltazar's style. Yeah. That's perfect.
And, or if you hand her, like, anything. And so when they sent me a copy of Afterlife with Archie and she took it, and she's just like, this is the... But my daughter's weird, though. No, she just ate it up. And it was like, because she knew who all those characters were, they could hit the ground running with the story because there's so, like, everybody, like, I don't care how, if you've ever read an Archie comic, those characters are so iconic, you know who they are and what they do. And they play to that really well.
The Sabrina book that's going to be in that same dark world that's coming out doesn't have anything to do with the shocking moment I cannot tell you about in the latest issue of Afterlife with Archie, but it is over the top, crazy, and you gotta read it.
So I gotta say this because
we just got Tyson to read an Archie book.
Well, no. I have never read an Archie book in my life. Like, I don't get what the appeal is. Like, I don't even. I think I know what the general idea behind it is.
It's the same appeal behind, like, Saved by the Bell.
Is it, and that's what I've always assumed. It's like high school drama in comic book form. Imagine
Saved by the Bell in a zombie apocalypse.
Well, no. Okay, and
you watch the shit out of that.
Yeah. Everybody's eating Screech.
Yeah. Yes. Afterlife with Archie sounds like I definitely want to check it out. But Archie, like, all the history leading up to it, I have never gotten the appeal.
But you don't have to get the appeal to have known just sort of culturally what Archie's about.
We can't go too far without you mentioning eating Screech. They already did that.
What?
They are the porn movies.
Oh, that's right. Screech was in porno.
Have you guys seen that Lifetime movie that's coming out about behind the scenes of Saved by the Bell?
No, but no, I'm so interested. It's crazy. I spent
the most awkward evening of my life in a room locked with him and Gary Coleman.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, Gary Coleman was an asshole.
Oh, God. So this was, I don't know, you guys want me to tell this
story? Yes. You can't just casually drop it and not tell the story.
I'll tell you my story after. Yeah,
go. I got a gig at Sundance one year filming for, like, just B-roll up at Sundance for a guy who created this, like, Botox and electrolysis treatment or whatever. And it's the guy who had the ugly baby on Seinfeld. Like, he's the guy who hired us. So we go up to Sundance, and they're based in the Paul Mitchell Salon at Park City. And the whole goal is just, like, let's get celebrities using our products, because they wanted to use this as B-roll for an infomercial later. And it's the year that Dustin Diamond and Gary Coleman are shooting a pilot for a show to see which one of them can get more swag for free at Sundance.
What?
And so they come into the salon, and the guy from Seinfeld with the ugly baby's like, oh, this is perfect. We're going to get Gary Coleman, and we're going to get Dustin Diamond, and they're going to be doing our product, and it's going to be perfect. We're going to film it. They're going to film it. It's going to be on their show. It's going to be sweet. So he's talking them into doing this. And it's just weird. Like, the entire – because they've got this whole camera crew following them. And things are okay. Like, Dustin Diamond's, like, kind of goofy. He's a little dopey. And Gary Coleman's just like, I'm fucking Gary Coleman. Like, and that's how he is. But he's with his girlfriend.
It was that weird, trashy girl? The weird, trashy girl. Now, oh, I've got stories about that.
So now she's having this problem with her sister and her dog.
Yeah, that fucking dog.
And so she's on the phone screeching. And she's just, like, becoming unglued, right? Because of some issue where, like, her sister won't watch her dog or something, and they're up at Sundance, and she needs her dog watched. And so Gary Coleman is going around, and we're, like, we're in a hair salon, so, like, it's the size of the room we're recording in. It's a tight fit, and there's four camera guys from their show. There's me with a camera. There's the guy I was with the camera, plus all of the people working in the salon normally.
This is not a private area, is what you're saying.
It's not a private area, but it's so tightly packed with people. It's like everybody knows what's going on. You know what I mean? Except for when they take Dustin Diamond in the back to get Botox.
Oh, Jesus.
So Gary Coleman's just like, what's the matter, baby? Like, what's going on? Put me on the phone with him. And I watch him, like, lose his shit on the phone for 20 minutes. And I can't leave. I'm getting paid to sit here, and I'm like, I can't roll this.
You should have.
Like, you should have.
I wish I had.
YouTube gold.
YouTube gold.
Well, this was, well, he died maybe a couple of years, a few years later. But it was just, it was so awkward watching him just become unhinged. And, like, the guy who played the ugly baby's father on Seinfeld, he was pissed because Gary Coleman's just like, I can't do any of this. I don't care. Fuck the TV show. Fuck everybody. I just got to leave. We got to take care of my girl's dogs. And she's just still just like crying. And this was like 4 hours.
Fuck. That is a drama life. I wouldn't want no part of. Oh, my God.
Oh, it was weird.
So this is probably around the same time-ish then, because this is a good...
How do you guys all have these fucking Gary Coleman
stories? So, wow.
So this is a Lance and Tom story. So the way Lance and Tom became, well, we were already kind of friends, but I was Lance's assistant manager at a video game store in American Fork, And Gary Coleman would come in. And he comes in with this girl and her fucking dog. And she's like,
the fucking dog.
And she's like pissed off that the dog had to get out of the car or whatever. And
that dog seems to cause her a lot of stress.
I really hope the dog's a fan of the podcast.
I do too. So they
the
go outside.
The dog's as dead as the rest of them.
So the thing about Gary Coleman is Gary Coleman refused to buy a new console. And this was like, I think the Xbox 360 hadn't come out yet. So we were still rocking like PlayStation 2 era.
Jesus.
Right? Yeah. Like PlayStation 2, Xbox. Okay. Motherfucker was rolling a PS1. And so Gary Coleman is like, I want some Grand Theft Auto. And he pulls out the bargain bin Grand Theft Auto 2 for $350 or $5 or whatever it was, and starts to try to haggle us down on price on Grand Theft Auto on PlayStation 1. And Lance is like, listen, motherfucker, I don't care who you are, this game is $5. And he's like, I got $350. And Lance is like, dude, he's like, I'm Gary. And, you know, it was amazing. And he was always, like, he would come in, like, 3-4 times a year. And he was the, well, not the biggest because he was tiny, but he was a prick. and she would always be there looking really pissed off that she's in a video game store. So, God rest his soul, the dude was interesting to deal with.
Fuck.
Oh, man. I don't even know how he ended up out here.
Like, what happens to you that you end up in fucking, like,
well,
Utah
I think what
Valley.
It was, he did, I had some friends who worked with him on,
Church Ball.
Oh. And I think that's what brought him out here the first time. He's like, I love this place. These mountains. Let's live here.
Let's go haggle about video game prices at $5.
No, I had a friend, she was an extra on Church Ball, and she was that sort of slightly trashy, she's not going to listen to this, so slightly trashy, sort of like...
Did she have a Pomeranian?
No, she didn't. It wasn't her.
Oh, okay.
And, like, Gary Coleman would just try to come on to her all the time.
Yeah.
It's just like, you're having financial problems? Can I help you out with that? You know, that kind of thing. And she was just like, it was adorable, but creepy.
Fucking Gary Coleman.
Gary Coleman.
I didn't know you guys had all these.
Yeah, dude. Like, he used to, I mean, between him and Donnie and Marie Osmond, man, like, Utah Valley was a riot, dude.
Oh, I've got so many Marie Osmond stories.
Oh, man. What's the brother? There's one of the brothers, and I told.
There's so many. There's like 20 of them.
I got to tell one of the brothers, he told me the Guitar Hero was the music of the devil. And I got to say to him with a straight face, you sing for the Osmonds. You are the devil. It was the greatest moment of my adult life.
What the
fucking Utah Valley, man. That place is crazy.
All right. I think that's probably a good note to wrap this podcast up on. I don't.
The Gary Coleman power.
We started with Legos and went through comics and some various, and ended on the Osmonds.
Can we share this? Can we share it with hashtag fucking Gary Coleman?
I mean, probably have to at this point. All right. So thanks for joining us. Our probably much disappointed sponsors this week. Of course, bohemianbrewery.com, superherostuff.com, secretcompasscollectibles.com. Check out Brian on Fool of Sith.
Indeed. Follow me on Twitter at Swankmatron.
Yes, at Swankmatron.
And SW_WookieLeaks.
Wookie with two E's at the end.
Yeah, like you spell Wookie.
Yeah, if you... Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm gonna
Are you thinking like Nookie?
Yeah, I was...
Oh, Nookie Leaks. That'd be terrific.
That sounds like an ad for
it's
kind of medical
Wookie
promo.
Leaks
Wookie Nookie Leaks.
Ooh.
Wookie Leaks is probably your best source for Star Wars.
Brazilian Wookie Nookie Leaks.
And Mark Capo.
For great Twitter names.
Do your fucking plugs.
Yeah, Salt City Strangers and at Mark Abel on Twitter. I guess you could follow me. I say crazy shit, I suppose.
Don't we all?
He's going to have a lot to say about Gary Coleman over the next couple days.
You need to fabricate a story about how you tried to rob his grave.
Oh, my God. Wow.
You're like, I had to have a Gary Coleman story to fit in.
I needed the PS2 he was buried with.
All right, thanks for listening. We'll catch you guys next week.
What up, Internet? This is Tom from the Entertainment is Dead podcast. And if you haven't had enough of me already, come on over to entertainmentisdead.com where you'll get some quality stuff like this.
Like, he took his game studio and he went home.
He's part of the Sriracha relocation program.
You got a hater.
You I really just it. Don't want that to be the one that breaks my computer's cherry.
So you can come grab this dose of ridiculousness every Wednesday until the end of time. You can find us once again at www.entertainmentisdead.com, where you can stream the audio right off the site, on iTunes, also on Stitcher. If you want to communicate with us, you can reach us on Twitter at EIDpodcast. We're basically everywhere. We'll catch you guys there.
Thank you for listening to the Big Shiny Podcast. As always, you can check us out on iTunes. Please listen and rate. You can also find us on Stitcher. And be sure to check out our good friends at Entertainment is Dead and the Full of Sith Podcast. And a special thanks to our good sponsors at Secret Compass, who you can find at secretcompassonline.com.